Hello everyone and welcome back to Lily of the Herbs Talks. In this next episode, I interview Honey and get some really beautiful tips and inspiration on how we can connect back to our own natural rhythms and the importance of routine to create balance for the health of our bodies and minds. I was really drawn to interview her because I think that it's difficult with a lot of uncertainty happening at these times during lockdowns and border closures when people's plans and ideas and hopes for the future are often really uncertain, that we still have some sense of solidity and a routine that we can fall back on. That's really, it's just about coming back to the presence of daily life. And it was a great reminder for me. I've been traveling a lot up and down the coast the last month, visiting family and friends and working out where it is that I want to base myself. And yeah, I've been forgetting the importance of routine and feeling that in my mental health and general health. So yeah, it's inspired me to get more grounded. And I hope that you all really enjoy it because she is a really, really in-depth and precise practitioner and has a lot of wisdom to share. So enjoy.
Great. So I'm here with Honey from Tage School. Is that how I pronounce it?
Yeah, Tage School.
Tage School. And you're based in Melbourne, right, Honey?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And we're just meeting for the first time, which is really exciting, but I've been following Honey for quite a while now on the internet. And yeah, I love the things that she shares. She's been sharing the whole time beautiful practices, self-care rituals and different Ayurvedic practices for body, mind and soul. And yeah, I love the depth and clarity and honoring that she has of ancient traditions and practices. And that's why I've invited her on here today. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you for recognizing all of that. It's very nice to hear.
Yeah, it's rare. I think there's so many different traditions out there today, but it feels like you're sticking to one path and kind of being a voice for, traditional Ayurvedic practice. Where did you start your whole journey? I just want to know more about you.
Yeah, so I definitely have gone down different paths and tried different traditions and lineages, but I began this journey at about 11 years old when I just fell in love with this idea of yoga. I didn't really know what it was, but I was living in the country in coastal Victoria, and there was a yoga class being offered about 45 minutes drive away, and I convinced my mum to drive me there once or twice a week. And I did this very, very traditional hatha yoga class until the teacher went on maternity leave, and I don't think she actually came back to teach. If she did, I would have continued. So I dipped in and out of yoga from the age of 11 and got really deeply back into it in about 22, 23 and have stayed very, very persistent with yoga since then for, you know, over 10 years. And I came to Ayurveda because I went on my first yoga retreat, and one of my beautiful yoga teachers, who I really adore, Joe Buick, just brought up this concept of the doshas.
Mm.
And just really resonated and something clicked, and I realized that I could really absorb so much information about Ayurveda and never become bored. And I am autistic, and autistic people often find maybe one or two subjects that they're very, very interested in, maybe more, but it's generally one, and they just study and devote everything to it and learn everything about it and get a very, very deep knowledge. And for me, that has been ancient Indian traditions, ancient South Asian traditions. So that's how I became obsessed with it. And then it's been my primary personal interest or focus.
Beautiful. And I guess you've done that through so many different teachers. Was there any particular teachers, you mentioned just one before, that were very inspirational for you that you're still working with?
Yeah, definitely. So there's some, I had some really bad experiences with people who look very good on the internet, but are not embodying yoga or Ayurveda at all in real life. So I definitely had a few really disturbing experiences that further instilled the need for what we call viveka or discernment in your spiritual practice. But the teachers who I've studied with for a long time and who are still very present almost daily is Vamadeva Shastri and Maya Tiwari.
Okay, where are they? Are they in Australia?
I think that Vamadeva is in India now. He's American. And I believe that Maya Tiwari is in America, and she is from, I'm not going to remember, but it's the place where Jim Jones had the People's Temple.
Ah, okay. For those that don't know about Jim Jones, yeah. Who's he?
Yeah. Oh, he's like, he's a cult leader.
Ah, okay.
Mass cult suicide in human history.
Oh, yeah. And that's what the Brian Jonestown Massacre song's about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I know now. Okay. Wow.
It's Gaia. It sounds like Gaia or something like that, but she's from there.
Okay. Yeah. And what lineage of this is that you study this?
Yeah, so in Ayurveda, there's lots of different lineages, but they mainly relate to whether or not you were born into, like, and what race you are and what caste you are. Mm-hmm. So it is a westernized form. It definitely is. And it is a modernized form, but I'm always bouncing back to the traditional concepts to look at it. But in terms of my yoga, it's a tantric, a non-dual Shaiva tantric lineage that is a bit more clear than Ayurveda.
Beautiful. And so you practice yoga. And also we were just talking before we started recording about herbal medicine as well. You do Ayurvedic medicine, herbal medicine as part of your practice?
So I'm a lifestyle consultant, so I can prescribe herbs, but I'm not a doctor or a practitioner. I made the decision to not become a practitioner because of the waste involved in becoming a practitioner. A lot of plastic, a lot of washing oil down the drain, a lot of washing linens and towels with oils. And my second personal interest field is climate change and environmental issues. So I knew too much about that to dedicate in that way. So what consultants do is more talking about lifestyle changes that the client can take on themselves rather than giving herbs as a pill or a salve. And I do sometimes prescribe herbs, but there's a lot of issues with herbs at the moment in Australia because of the amount of pollution in India, and therefore the toxicity levels in the herbs. I think it was the same with Chinese herbs and lead for a long time. And a lot of the herbs that come from Ayurveda that people talk about and use, especially, you know, in tonics and tinctures and drinks and all of this stuff, they're called rasayana herbs. And those herbs are like things like ashwagandha, which is so common, shatavari, that kind of stuff. And basically they're a salve or a band-aid form of herb. So they might make your symptoms better, but by taking those all the time, we're not getting to the root cause. And Ayurveda is really about working out the root cause physically, emotionally, energetically. Emotional and energetic are kind of bunched into the one thing. But we really don't want to just be putting things on top and not getting to the real problem, which I think is a big part of what is happening right now in wellness and using these ancient methods as a band-aid.
I definitely agree with you there. It's using natural substances in a Western mindset, kind of, yeah, as a band-aid. I definitely agree with that. And I think that herbs should only come after diet and lifestyle modification. That's why it's beautiful to talk with you, that you have the skills to coach people and to, yeah, educate them on how they can just make simple adjustments in their life.
Yeah. Really, Ayurvedic medicine, Ayurvedic healing, it should be a self-healing practice, and it should, the doctor or the practitioner's role is to inspire rather than to fix. Yeah. So that's kind of the aim of the game, is to get people to notice how much better they feel and remember, and then stay with those practices, because so much of yoga and Ayurveda is about routine and rhythm. And really, you could take kilograms of herbs, but if you don't have a routine that aligns with the sun, then nothing will work.
I feel you so much there. It's that routine and ritual, and we're going to get into that more. I'm going to ask you about some really effective rituals and routines that people can take away from this podcast, but what's your routine each day? Love to know that.
Yeah, so I like to be very honest and transparent, and my routine has been really funny lately. I'm really in my business, in my work, in my spiritual practice. I'm in this, there's this term in business that's form, storm, and then renorm. Mm-hmm. And my whole life is in the storm part.
Okay. So, I'm glad you're here in the storm.
And I know that. So nothing is precisely as it would be. But previously, I definitely would aim to get up at least before six and do a sadhana and then do Ayurvedic practices. And basically what's happening at the moment is those things are still happening, but they're kind of throughout the day, and less routine and regimented, which is how we know when we're out of balance. And that Dinacharya means your daily routine, and we have Ritucharya, which is the routine according to the season. So your rituals should change according to the season. And it's really funny, because what other people consider, you know, routines or morning routine, when you've been doing Ayurveda for your whole life, or, you know, for what feels like your whole life, for 10 years, it's just part of your day. So things like tongue scraping, things like salt rinsing, Garudasha, oil pulling, doing dry body brushing and self massage with herbal medicated oils that are specific to me and the climate, those are all just things that happen anyway. And really important for me is eating times. That's super, super healing, and going to bed early and having some form of reflection or contemplation throughout the day. And I also live my weekly schedules in alignment with the Vedic astrology. So that's really helped me to have a weekly routine as well.
Okay. So how would Monday differ to Tuesday, going with the Vedic calendar?
You'll be testing me, and I'm not sure if I remember off by heart, but on Mondays it's ruled by the moon, so I do all of my administration on a Monday, and I wouldn't really be talking to anyone. I'd kind of be moving a bit slower, a bit more gentle, planning, reflecting, that kind of stuff. Then I know that because my Tuesdays swap around a little bit, but Wednesday is ruled by Mercury, So it's all about communication. So that's when I'm creating things or talking to people. Thursday, I look at more complex ideas. And Friday and Saturday, I study, because Saturday's for Saturn. So it's all about practice and discipline. Mm. And and Sunday, I can't remember what rules Sunday, but I generally do a mix of things on a Sunday.
And that sounds a bit like Western, also planetary astrology, because Fridays, isn't that Venus Day? Was that when you hang out with friends and lovers? That
makes sense, yeah.
Oh, that's such a beautiful sharing just then. I really like that. I think that would help me, because I create my own structure, running my own business and studying and all of these things. I need some kind of like overarching guiding theme, I think, to help me bring a little bit more structure in there. So I'm going to take that one, I think.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, Ayurveda essentially, really at the crux of it, is about aligning with nature. Mm. And if there's the celestial bodies are creating, say, more gentleness or more energy or more capacity to communicate well, then it's just you're swimming with the stream rather than trying to swim upstream by taking advantage of those energies.
Yeah, I hear that. In terms of one of the things that we talked to also about discussing on this podcast was practices that people could take during lockdown. And yeah, because it is about aligning with what's got, you know, the season, the who you are, your dosha. But what about when you're in lockdown? Like, do you have advice for people during those times?
Yeah, totally. So I would, you know, maybe it's some people are gonna blossom in lockdown, and other people are really going to become agitated. And if you're of any kind of spiritual leaning, I would highly suggest that you look at this time as a home retreat, and that you take the time to do the longer sadhana or the longer self-care practice or whatever it is. In terms of rituals or ideas, they're probably not going to be that fun that I really strongly suggest your routine in terms of sleeping and eating times. So living with the sun, because that's going to help you to build your digestion both physically and emotionally, so that when any emotional stuff comes up, you're able to digest it fully and experience it and take the nourishment. And the other thing, well, there's millions of things that I could suggest. I'd highly suggest taking up a mantra practice, so a chanting practice. That might not be great for everyone, because traditionally we don't want to do that chanting where someone else can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be in like a silent space. But the main thing is actually going to be that you have to keep moving your body and getting to move, hopefully outside, even if it's just a fast walk, not dripping with sweat, but breaking some form of sweat every day, because the whole energy of a lockdown is tamas or kapha. And tamas means like heaviness, density. It also means ignorance, and it can become depression. So for both of those, the energies of both of those things is cold. So in order to remedy it, all of Ayurveda is balancing with the opposite type, like quality. So all of those things are cold, heavy, slow, dense. So we need fast, hot, and light to feel better.
Even if we are a fast, hot, and light person, I guess we still need it, but maybe a little less than someone who is already more kapha.
Yeah, so a little less. I would say, though, just being, if you're in a lockdown, especially with like a, you know, you can't really leave your house, or you have a 5K zone or whatever it is, the energy in general, the environment that you're in is more stagnant and inert. So just have to maintain that, I guess. Maintain the movement.
And I guess you've said a couple of times now, living with in alignment with the sun. And I think that is a really important point to make, because it's like, oh, I don't have to go to work tomorrow. I don't have to leave the house. So, you know, maybe I'll just stay up later. And I do think, yeah, and then being on screens, blue lights, that for me can really whack me out. If I watch a movie or something, even like past nine, I'll then really struggle to fall asleep and then want to sleep in later the next morning.
Yeah, and this is all really also solidified by Western science, Western modern science, and it would be very bad for hormones as well, especially if you're someone who has any hormonal issues or any weight issues or, you know, sugar, blood level, you know, blood sugar issues, eating and sleeping at those appropriate times. So mainly having your biggest meal be at midday, like just doing that is going to change so much of how people feel.
Yes, beautiful advice. Yeah, and maybe blue light glasses or putting on like a screen brightening, like dimmer. Yeah. Even though I actually think screen hygiene is important, not even being on screens after dinner, even if possible.
Yeah, finding a book that you like, or I journal with it's a paper tablet, but it doesn't have any light in it. And I also listen to audiobooks or podcasts while I'm knitting in the evening. Yeah, or just, you know, I go to bed earlier and get into it. I've got a heap of big Ayurvedic books on my bedside right now, and I'm reading them at night, which is not that relaxing. But, you know, finding something that you like and indulging in it rather than having to consume via a screen all day almost.
And I really do feel that so many chronic illnesses and depressions today, they're not the sole cause, but a massive link is just being out of sync with nature and having a rhythm that isn't in harmony with our bodies, hormones and natural cycles. So just having you remind me of that is really beautiful and important.
Yeah, and Ayurveda says, and so does yoga really, that any problem in life is because we've forgotten our true nature.
Yes, it's a really hard time, I think, because, and I don't know, I won't really go into my opinions on COVID and the pandemic right now, but I think it is the reason we're experiencing something like this at this time is because, in a way, the human race has forgotten its own nature in many ways.
Yeah, well, you know, in yogic tradition, there's either only three or five, depending on what system you're looking at, things that can be happening at any point in time. And they're basically creation, revelation, maintenance, so dissolving or hiding, and then destruction or revelation. So to make it more simple, creation, maintenance and destruction are the only three things that can be occurring. And if you've been in a period of maintenance or stasis, which we collectively have been, you know, exponential growth for exponential long amount of time, there has to be an element of destruction before we can continue. And we're, you know, we're just in that destruction phase. And we see already that destruction phase gives birth to creativity. You know, people change and they pivot and they go online, or they, you know, create new apps or new technology, and look at ways to travel in your own country rather than flying and causing all this harm to the environment. And I do really feel that part of nature forcing us into destruction is also as a self-protective mechanism environmentally. Because nature will always prevail. And nature, you know, if climate change or whatever destroys everything and every human dies, some aspect of nature will continue beyond us. And it's always looking to balance and self-heal. And I believe that's my take is that that's happening right now. You know, the world is like, let's tip the scale back a little bit.
Yeah, I believe that too. It does feel that way. And our governments and everything, they might try and just pull it in. They're trying to rein it in, hold it back. But yeah, in the end, nature will prevail. I sort of want to stay on this topic, but flow really naturally on from here. What dosha do you resonate with? Like, what dosha are you?
So I'm 50-50 Vata Kapha, Vata coming first, and I have Rajas, Sattva, and then Tamas mind. So the doshas only represent the physical body, but then we have this other system that represents what your mind is like. So that's kind of my makeup. So primarily the primary element is cold in me. So I need a lot of heat and a lot of warmth to balance.
Because Vata is air and ether, which is cold, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And Kapha too. Kapha is a cold, heavy density.
And then it's Pitta, which is fire and water, which is the warm, hot energy, isn't it? Yeah. But you say you have Rajas in the mind. Rajas, is that a fiery quality of the mind?
I think people would call it fiery, but it is it's actually wind.
Okay.
And the friction of the wind is said to have created the first spark of life. So I guess wind creates friction, which can create heat. But essentially it's wind and it's cold again. So Rajas is the creative energy. It's the changing and the ideas and the artistic side of things and the inventing. But it can also become, it can be seen as anxiety or overthinking because it's movement. So yeah, that's the main kind of quality. And anyone who you know who is artistic or has a creative part of them, they've probably got a lot of Rajas.
Well, it's interesting because I've had an Ayurvedic consultation from one of my teachers and he said that I'm like you, I'm Vata Kapha, like with a little bit of Pitta in there, maybe like a quarter Pitta, but I have a lot of Rajas in the mind as well. So I feel like I'm meeting a kindred soul.
Yeah, so we need like a lot of warming spices, a lot of oil, a lot of slowness, planning, and like the main healing thing is routine. Because when we have routine, as in, you know, doing the same thing at the same time every day, it sets our nervous system up to relax because it knows what to expect. So it calms that it gives the Rajas a structure to be creative within.
Do you have a very structured life in general? Do you have to create your structure?
My life is complete. Like my life, if I didn't create structure, it's completely unstructured. You know, I only have to, the only deadlines that I have is if I'm teaching or if I'm running a training, you know, or if I have a session in my membership that I have to show up for. But autistic people, Vata people, Rajas people thrive on routine. So definitely now in my 30s, having that structure and that routine is so, so healing. And I even find, especially the last couple of weeks, because we were in lockdown and my partner's at home as well. And then it's a bit too stimulating for me to have him in the same room on the line of work. It's a lot. And so all my routine went out the window. So I'm trying to get back onto that planned, that structured, organized way of being, because it is so healing.
But I guess it's not our natures inherently. So it's almost like trying to create that when it could be like, oh, but I was going to go over here now. Oh,
Absolutely, super easily distracted and very hard to focus.
Yeah, I definitely relate with that. I think it's a constant learning journey for me to create that structure. At the moment. Mine is
like alarms.
I have alarms.
Labeled alarms. It goes off at like 11:45 in the morning and it's like, now it's time to cook lunch, you know, and everything 5 p.m. go for a run. It's like everything is ruled by alarms. It's the only way, because otherwise I would just float off and do something else.
That is great. Wow. This has been, I hope it's beneficial for everybody else out there, but it's incredibly beneficial for me hearing this from you, because like, I know I'm Vata, but yeah, my main routine is waking up each morning and meditating for 20 minutes and then doing some movement and then trying to be in bed by 9. And yeah, I think more could definitely around meal times. I think that I find that difficult to nail, really, like especially traveling a lot.
Yeah, and meal times, especially for a Vata type, you know, you have slow digestion anyway. So, or variated digestion, where it's sometimes it'll be really strong and sometimes it'll be really weak. So, and metabolism. So having the routine with the food and not snacking, allowing yourself to have time to digest the food. People think that it's about food or it's about physical nourishment, and it is, but it's more so that your physical body is interpenetrated with your energy body. So if your physical body and your metabolism is sluggish, then you're not going to be able to digest experience and everything's going to feel overwhelming. So looking at it from like all perspectives, not just thinking about it as food.
That makes a lot of sense. What about people who are more kapha? Do they kind of benefit from like shaking it up a little and not having a routine?
I would say everyone needs to have a routine. That routine is probably the biggest healing pillar in all of Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. They would say routine and then getting your food right. And kapha, because there is such slow metabolism, routine would probably support that. But it's more like kapha needs to do stuff that creates heat and not overwhelm body too much. So it's less food, maybe skipping breakfast or skipping dinner, whatever feels right for that individual body, and making sure that you move as well. Whereas sometimes Vata needs to actually just stop moving.
I agree with that. Yeah, sometimes it's like, oh, even transporting somewhere, going to see someone, I realize I'm like, I don't think it was a good idea for me to go there because I have to transport myself there.
And that highly increases Rajas and Vata. And, you know, sometimes it's not worth it. You know, I not that long ago went and had an energy healing session the other side of town, but the road was so busy and I couldn't find a park, and it was so that it was like, actually just staying home would have been more healing. However, getting that kind of being that sensitive and not being able to just like really strongly deal with the fact that the traffic is bad and you're running late is a sign of that weak digestion.
Yes,
you need to focus on the digestion and get that stronger, and then you'll be able to move about more and alter, you know, what you're putting into your body, including through all the senses, so what you're looking at, hearing as well, to what you're doing that day. So for instance, if you're traveling to go and see someone, maybe you don't overload your physical digestive system, you have smaller meals, and you don't go on your phone as well, and you don't listen to something at the same time because there's enough that's being digested by your body and your energy body just in the movement.
Yeah, I really resonate with that. And if it's, if it's all gets overloaded all at once, it goes into like system meltdown, system shutdown.
Yeah, constipation.
Yes.
Life constipation, basically.
Yeah, I'm sure lots of Vata people out there will relate to like traveling to on holidays and then being constipated the first few days.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and what about Pitta people? What can you say for those people out there that have just like got a lot of heat and fire?
It's really hard for me to, like, I have to work really hard to understand Pitta because it's so, I basically have none, you know, maybe I have 1%. But how I see it expressed in my clients and students, what I would say is that we need to stop focusing on what other people are doing would be the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is looking around and comparing and judging and being competitive. So that's a sign of it being out of balance. So we really need to watch when we do that and see if we can kind of stay in our own lane and move all of those senses inward. And recognize the tendencies to overdo and also support so many clients that I've had or friends that are high pitta. It's been very linked with eating disorders, which is really strange because in Ayurveda they would say that kapha is more an eating disorder type. And looking at how we use control in various parts of our life, you know, if we get very controlling around food or exercise or relationship, I see that too. We need to calm all of that heat, you know, and so much of it is about what's going on in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can we get out of the mind and into the body? And does the body really need to go for that fifth run today? Probably not.
Yeah. It's very structured. Can be, yeah, that control. Okay. So I was sort of more thinking like with kapha, just shake it up a little, don't have a routine, but maybe with the pitta, it's a bit more like surrendering or relaxing control around certain areas in life.
Yes. More allowing.
Allowing. Yeah, beautiful. So yeah, you've covered so much. We've really got into, I feel like, sleep routine, setting an alarm daily for those Vata people to have regular meal times, sleep times, sleep hygiene. I think those are really important takeaways. Is there any other, like, is there one Ayurvedic practice which you would recommend, you wish that the whole world would do?
So a few things, I like, apart from the routine, which I think is the most important, I think something that everyone would benefit from, and of course meditation, is tongue scraping and body massage. Because oil massage is, we're in such a rajasic world. If you're, you know, in a modern, if you're in a city, and that oil massage will pacify all of the rajas and the vata that are created by the city and modern life. But the most complex and also the easiest thing to consider is the idea of opposing type quality heals. And another way that one of my other teachers expresses that is, he says, antidoting your tendencies. So it's looking at what you tend to do and is there an opposing quality that you can invite in? And that is probably going to be more helpful than looking at the doshas, because dosha means fault. It means that which goes out of balance easily or that which is fragile. And we don't want to associate or think about the doshas so much. So if we had, you know, if there's a kaphic person, there's a tendency to be slow and lethargic. So the opposing type quality is to move and create some heat. So yeah, looking at that balancing with the opposite.
Beautiful. Yeah. Very wise words. I think that's, yeah. And that's almost, that's the hardest and the easiest thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the other thing in thinking about that, which is always very interesting for people, is imbalance craves.
But
in a balanced state, we don't need anything. But if we're out of balance, that's when we're always looking for that snack or that social media or whatever it is to fulfill us. So know that if you're craving something, it's not actually you that is in control of your body.
Yeah. Would you say the same for food? Say if I'm craving salt, is that?
Yes.
You actually say the same for that? Mm.
Yeah, food is the easiest way to notice. And once you've recognized when you're in a balanced state, so you've experienced a state of balance doshically and those energies, you will be able to understand when you're in an imbalanced state more, because that the buddhi or the intellect will know that maybe the donut isn't right today, and a donut could be right one day, but maybe in this moment the donut isn't the right thing, but the body will still get it and eat it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like an autopilot. And that's how we know that we're very out of balance.
Yeah, beautiful. There's a lot to reflect on there. Yeah, you've shared so much with us today. Do you have any, I think this is a beautiful bite-sized podcast for those listeners out there. Do you have any last things you want to share with us?
I just think that, you know, well, actually there is one thing that I've been talking about a lot this week, which I think is so important and not said enough. And that is that a true yoga practice, a true spiritual practice from most traditions and an Ayurvedic practice, we need to come to a deep understanding that our thoughts are not truth. That our thoughts are not reality. And that is, you know, if you're interested in developing a spiritual way of being, that is the thing that we really, really need to sit with and sink our teeth into and embody and understand. And that's something that does not get addressed in New Age circles. But thoughts are not reality, and they're not conscious, because consciousness is not able to be expressed in words. So we need to stop holding on to the things that happen, the contents of our mind, as a way, as an idea of reality, because it's not.
Yeah, wow. I'm letting that digest. I definitely believe that.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting thing to watch students try to absorb that. Of the New Age spiritual rhetoric is the opposite of that. So it's so much unlearning that has to happen. They almost, you can tell, like they're almost spontaneously combusting, because they're like trying to understand. But you know, over analyzing everything to the point of paralysis tends to be where things are going, and that's got nothing to do with ancient spiritual systems.
When you said the New Age spiritual rhetoric, is that more like what you believe you can create? You mean that kind of thing?
Yeah, also emphasis on journaling, emphasis on going through our trauma, our history, our previous experience, rather than just digesting it, trying to create narratives from feelings, which essentially is blaming and shaming. We definitely do that naturally, but an embodied spiritual practice, we need to start letting go of that. It's this idea that life happens. You know, we really need to be okay with the fact that life happens rather than needing to understand it or it having to mean something. The more we do that, the further we get away from the truth.
Yeah, just being.
Yeah, allowing.
Yeah. And sticking to routine.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, hopefully it helps some people or it sparks something in them.
And I guess that's the basis of a lot of Vedic meditation, isn't it? It's just like, I am, like, it is.
Yeah. And just the meditation practice that I really love is called Tattva Bhavana. And essentially it's sitting with what is.
Yes.
So letting whatever's going on happen and being really present to it.
Yeah, presence. Everything in life can distract us from presence. I really feel that.
Yeah, totally.
Well, thank you so much. It was great to meet you. And I hope everyone's enjoyed this podcast. I'm definitely going to be getting you back on again because I feel like we've only just scratched the surface.
Yeah, beautiful. I'd love to talk all about the bioenergetic herbalism. Those qualities that what we call tattvas.
Beautiful. Okay, stay tuned everyone for next episode, and thank you, honey.